From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Before it became synonymous with the struggle for LGBT rights, Stonewall was a bar. The Stonewall riots took place in June 1969 when the LGBT community fought back against police raids of gay bars in New York City. It's considered the beginning of the gay liberation movement. But those physical spaces, like Stonewall, specifically for LGBTQ people, are disappearing throughout the country and have been for decades. Not just bars, but bookstores, coffee shops, and other gathering places meant to be safe for people to find community and support. Back in June on the program for Pride Month, we spoke about what's lost when these spaces disappear and where LGBTQ folks in Illinois are finding that community now. We were joined by Victor Salvo. He's the founder and executive director of The Legacy Project, a Chicago-based cultural and educational nonprofit that promotes the contributions of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer people. Also joining us from the east central part of Illinois was Jazz Routon. She's a board member with Uniting Pride of Champaign County. That's an LGBTQ resource center that also organizes the Champaign-Urbana Pride Fest. And we were joined by Tati Shante with the Brave Space Alliance, a Black-led, trans-led LGBTQ center on the south side of Chicago that provides resources and mutual aid. Shante is a mutual aid coordinator and makeup room supervisor there. Because this was taped back in June, we're not taking phone calls for this segment, but we'd love to hear what you thought about what we talked about. You can get in touch through our website, which is 21stshow.org. Okay, here now is our conversation on disappearing LGBT spaces. Tati, I want to begin with you. I mentioned just a moment ago, a number of gay and lesbian bars have closed across the country. But, you know, this is, I wonder if you can talk about, you know, some of these places have not always been as welcoming to the full spectrum of the LGBTQ community. Maybe you can begin just by talking about, you know, have those places been significant in your life? And do you feel welcome in them?
Yeah. I mean, it's complicated, you know, because especially here in Chicago, there aren't many like neighborhoods dedicated to like the LGBTQ community. I mean, like the biggest one that people can think of is Boys Town, North Halsted, and then maybe after that is Andersonville. But as you know, like both of those are on the north side of the city. So it segregates a lot of the rest of the city because Chicago is also one of the most segregated cities in the country. And so, you know, the north side is known for being predominantly white. And then like the south and west sides are known for being predominantly Black. And then there's a huge Hispanic population on the west side as well. And so by doing that and placing these neighborhoods in predominantly white neighborhoods, you're already ostracizing a big chunk of the community. And so it's complicated, you know, like I have worked in Boys Town, North Halsted, and I do a lot of activism still within that community, and I consider it my community. But, you know, yeah, I have not always felt welcome as like a trans person and just as being perceived as a woman.
Yeah, it's interesting because Boys Town is the neighborhood that I certainly came up knowing that neighborhood by that name, but that's been changed, right? People are trying to get the, you know, it was never an official sort of designation mm-hmm. you'd find on a city, you know, aldermanic map or something like that, but people are trying to rebrand that area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right now it's being rebranded to like North Halsted.
Okay. I want to bring in one other guest we've connected with for this segment. Victor Salvo is with us. He's the founder and executive director of The Legacy Project, a Chicago-based cultural and educational nonprofit that promotes the contributions of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer people. Victor, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you, Ryan, for having me.
I want to ask you about the Legacy Project. You've been active in researching and promoting the contributions that LGBT people have made internationally, but in Chicago, can you talk about the physical spaces there and that part of the history that's been lost over the years?
Well, I mean, I think it's hard to have that conversation without first acknowledging that even the creation of that neighborhood, formerly known as Boys Town, was itself, you know, a process of the gentrification of the Hispanics community that lived there before that. And that community was a process of you know, cultural shift from the Polish neighborhood it was before, and Ukrainian. So, you know, the forces which came together to sort of create that area were varied. And you know, it was originally called Newtown, which was a contrast to Old Town. And if you actually study the migration of the community, the first sort of queer safe spaces were kind of like the beatnik hangouts in Old Town. And the migration of the community seemed to follow Clark Street, traveling northwest, and a lot of bars started opening up on Clark Street. And it was really only the only reason why they ended up on Halsted, perfectly honest, is because if they had continued up Clark past Belmont, they would have run into Wrigley Field, which, because of its presence as such a sports mecca, was not deemed to be necessarily the safest place for a queer person to go. So the migration took a right and started going up Halsted Street. And that's pretty much where it went. And it doesn't begin resuming its path up Clark until you get around Wrigley Field. That's why Andersonville is now connected, because Halsted, you know, is sort of a jog off to the east, but it's still, Andersonville is still part of that migration. All that said, you know, the neighborhood has changed so much over time. And a lot of the older, you know, places are gone. I'm sorry to see Little Jim's going. It wasn't a bar that I frequented, but I respected its history and how long it was there. But really, the first bar that I'm aware of, and I forget the name, but it was up in the space that's currently occupied by the piano bar called Bobby Love's. Up sort of near the north end there, north of Wayland. And that was a lesbian bar. And that was actually the first bar in the 60s that opened in that neighborhood. Little Jim's followed that. So,
Let me take a moment to, sorry to interrupt you. Let me read a text we got from one of our listeners, sort of reminiscing about one of these places downstate. Brody in Champaign wrote in to say, quote, "Seeing queer people older than me at Chester Street Bar in Champaign had an impact on my life I don't think I totally understood when I was 19. He says, it made me realize there were more of us than I'd been led to believe growing up in a small, conservative town. I was devastated when it closed. I don't think there's been a good analog for that kind of feeling in my life until I found TikTok last summer. There are a lot of queer folks there, and it's brought me a lot of joy to hear funny or tragic coming out stories and dramatic first love tales from the kind of older lesbians and older gay men I might have talked to or wondered about early in a long evening spent dancing at C Street," end quote. Victor, what were those spaces for you as you were coming into your identity that helped you find a sense of community?
Well, ironically, before it was Chester Street, it was called The Bar, you know, in quotation marks. And that was where I came out, was in that same space, just under its previous iteration, which was owned in part by Eddie Dugan, who owned the Bistro in Chicago. So The Bar was a fabulous, fabulous place. All the DJs that played at the Bistro cycled through The Bar. And it became a huge mecca. So that was really kind of where I got, you know, I sort of cut my teeth. And that experience is very isolated, because when I moved back to Chicago after graduating from U of I went back in, back into the closet, but I had lost my entire social network because it was based in Champaign-Urbana. So it was almost 5 years before I actually began to venture out into the North Halsted area. The first place, honestly, I ever went to was Sidetrack.
Interesting. All right, let me take a moment to remind our listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, and we're talking about the disappearance of spaces specifically for LGBTQ people, like bars, coffee shops, bookstores, and what the loss of those physical spaces in Illinois has meant for the community and where people are finding community now. We're talking with Victor Salvo, Executive Director of the Legacy Project in Chicago, Tati Shante, Mutual Aid Coordinator with the Black-led and Trans-led Brave Space Alliance, also in Chicago, and Jazz Routon, a board member with the Uniting Pride Community Center in Champaign. And Jazz, I want to bring you into the conversation. I wonder if you can... Are there physical spaces you are finding community in today, or maybe as the text we got from Brody suggested, has this world moved more online through apps or the web?
Yeah, good question. And I kind of want to follow up with what Victor was talking about with C Street and what was mentioned within the text as well. The community really took a hit when that bar disappeared. And you know, for a long time, you know, bars, a lot of LGBTQ history have played an important role for LGBTQ visibility, sense of belonging, community. I think what was more important specifically about C Street and with being in Champaign is that you are able to be around not only queer people, but queer people of color, right? There was more diversity there that you could find that maybe you didn't really find in more of the other affirming spaces within Champaign. Since that, you know, I was lucky when I moved into this community, I did get an opportunity to experience that. And now much of what we have for queer events or nightlife are kind of pop-up events where we come together in a space that's not specifically queer, but, you know, is said to be affirming and accepting. And we get to gather for a few hours ever so often. And I really do value those spaces. Those are really important. Those opportunities are excellent, but they're not the same. You know, you don't necessarily get to see the generation. You don't get to see the history. You don't get to see symbols of inclusion around you because it's not a specific queer space. You also sometimes don't get to experience the racial and ethnic diversity around you. So, I mean, in this community, I've heard people say like, you know, the disappearance of some of these spaces is okay because it means that the community is more accepting, that we're integrating within the broader community better. And I disagree with that. You know, I think people with more privileged identities tend to have that perspective, but it really leaves people with multiple marginalized identities, you know, queer people of color, kind of left out, where you're not really sure where you can find spaces, where you can find other people that are like you. You know, a lot of the places are predominantly white, and that's just how it is in Illinois in the cornfields. But I don't know. So I agree that we still need those physical spaces. You know, we do have a vibrant online community where we are able to kind of inform people of upcoming events and allow people to get together in that way. But it's not the same. And it's especially not the same for rural LGBTQ folks that are, you know, coming into the town to find community without knowing where a specific, you know, physical spaces such as C Street, they're kind of lost. You know, Victor mentioned it took him 5 years to kind of get used to Chicago after leaving Champaign. And it took me about 5 years, even as a, you know, being part of Uniting Pride, to really build community here. And I think that's the downfall of not having a specific queer space, is it takes word of mouth. It takes a long time to break into some of the communities.
Tati, we need to take a break in about a minute and a half here, but I wonder if any of this resonates with you. Maybe you can just talk a little bit about the sort of space that Brave Space tries to create, either on a pop-up basis or with, mm-hmm. you know, more fixed presence.
Yeah, so Brave Space, we just bought the third floor of our building. So this is the first time that we've had like this big space to offer people to come in to have a community that they can call their own. And you know, it's hard right now because we're in the pandemic still and not everyone has been vaccinated, and especially because we serve a vulnerable population, like we work with some homeless people, and then it's been a little difficult getting people to come in, but we're very excited to like offer this space for Black, trans, and queer people because we don't really have like a physical space to call our own, and especially offering spaces that aren't bars necessarily, so then people of all ages can come in and find a community of their own, I think is really, really important as well.
Okay, let me take a moment to reintroduce my guests. If you're just joining us, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. And on today's show, we're revisiting a conversation we had back in June for Pride Month about disappearing spaces for gays, lesbians, and transgender people. More than 36% of gay bars have closed in recent decades, but it's not just bars, but other safe spaces, coffee shops, bookstores, that sort of thing. And we're talking about what the loss of those places has meant and where LGBTQ people in Illinois find community and connect with their history today. I was joined by Victor Salvo, executive director of the Chicago-based Legacy Project, a cultural and educational nonprofit that promotes contributions of LGBTQ people. We were also joined by Jazz Routon, a board member with Uniting Pride of Champaign County, and Tati Shante with the Brave Space Alliance, a Black-led, trans-led LGBTQ center on the south side of Chicago, which provides resources and mutual aid. For now, we need to take a break. Coming up, you're going to hear more of our conversation about disappearing LGBTQ spaces. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us.
Support for The 21st comes from Christie Clinic. Christie Clinic, providing health care to the community for more than 90 years. Local procedures, providers, specialties, and choice. Christie Clinic is focused on caring for the community.
This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Spaces for LGBTQ people are disappearing, with more than a third of the gay bars in the U.S. closed in recent decades, including many here in Illinois. Back in June, during Pride Month, we spoke about what's lost when that happens and where younger generations are finding support and community today. I was joined by Victor Salvo, executive director of the Chicago-based Legacy Project. It's a cultural and educational nonprofit that promotes the contributions of LGBTQ people. And also Jazz Routon, a board member with Uniting Pride of Champaign County, and Tati Shante with the Brave Space Alliance, which is a Black-led, trans-led LGBTQ plus center on the south side of Chicago. It provides resources and mutual aid. Because this is on tape, we're not taking calls, but you can always let us know what you thought by tweeting at us, at 21st Show, that's at 21st Show. I started the second half of our conversation by asking Tati how the pandemic has affected their work at the Brave Space Alliance.
It was really difficult because that was right when the pandemic hit. Like, we were starting some new services and some new programming and had to switch it all up very last minute. But it was also a great opportunity for our food pantry, which we've now served over 300,000 people within the Chicago area during the pandemic. So we were able to really organize and mobilize food and get that to people. But it was difficult not being able to come together in community, because a lot of times, especially for Black, trans, and queer folks, we don't really have a place to like call home and like get together, maybe because of how we grew up. And a lot of Black and brown, trans, and queer youth have been kicked out of their homes. And so not really being able to go anywhere and to be around the people that we want to be around, it really can damage our emotional well-being and our just health and safety in general.
I want to go to the phones now at 800-222-9455. Jerry is on the line from Urbana. Jerry, thank you for calling in.
Hi. Thanks for including me. I wanted to address the issue of older LGBTQ folks and the difficulty in finding community. I have been in town with my husband for over 40 years now, and I'm quite well known and involved in a lot of different LGBTQ organizations over the years. But we have found community, and we're finding that people that move here, especially when they're older, it's more difficult, and they maybe don't want to go out to nightclubs or whatever, even the ones that are kind of open and affirming. And we used to have a lot more organized activities. There used to be a gay men's choir in town. There used to be social groups that would do potlucks once a month. And that was kind of a way to, by networking, word of mouth, to get to know other folks. I do want to make sure that I have time to include that Uniting Pride has started an online, kind of a virtual space called Aging Up, and that's for people, say, around age 50, think about the AARP crowd, to come online on Sunday afternoons at 4 p.m., and it's not really a planned program. It's just to chat and get to know folks. And I bring this up because I know that a couple months ago we had one guy show up from had moved from a Chicago suburb down here to be closer to family, and just said, "Oh my God, I've had a really hard time finding folks, especially during the pandemic."
Yeah, that does make it tough to get out there. But thank you so much for calling in, Jerry.
Yeah,
with that.
Great.
And Victor, I want to ask you. I mean, this sounds like, you know, this is a broader story in America, right? I'm thinking of that book came out 20 years ago now, Bowling Alone, right? The disappearance of community groups. But can you talk about that, particularly for older members of the LGBTQ community? You know, maybe without those dedicated physical spaces, having to find new ways of coming together.
Sure, I can give you sort of my take on it. One of the things that we are really conscious of with Legacy is that this community, much more so than any other community or minority, has had a profound lack of intergenerational contact. It's one of the reasons why the physicalization of our history that Legacy engages in is so important, because it makes it possible to share those stories beyond the normal dynamic, in which, in like other family constructs, you have a grandpa who tells you about the old days kind of thing, right? We're already so separated from each other by youth and class and ethnicity and all these other, you know, isms that have come into the mix. And the thing that I have observed is that in many ways the needs of the elderly are very similar to the needs of queer youth in terms of lack of access, lack of spaces, the lack of resources. There's just there's so many commonalities there, and it really comes down to places like Jazz's work downstate and Tati's work to create spaces to meet those needs. Legacy doesn't have a physical installation where like people can come to, except for the walk itself, which is outdoors. And in many ways, we survived the pandemic because it was outside, but we also couldn't do tours or do anything like that. We were able to actually mix groups of different kinds of people together, you know, on a tour. We're starting that up again now, but I myself am an older person, and I'm fortunate that I'm still working and still actively engaged with a lot of different folks. So I don't expect to be on the cusp of that sort of loneliness and isolation for a while. But I also know that it's, you know, if I live that long, it's very likely to happen to me too. So I'm really conscious and very sensitive whenever I hear anybody talk about their isolation. It's something that I think we as a community have to do better. And obviously not everyone's going to be comfortable going to a bar. Bars are really, honestly, for young people.
I feel you on that. Jazz Rotten, let me ask you, I wonder if you have a perspective on what Victor was just talking about there, about the sort of challenges of intergenerational contact in the community.
Yeah, you know, I think that, I know Jerry as well, who just popped on, and Uniting Pride's worked with Jerry quite a few times to kind of make that intergenerational connection. And so we held a Pride picnic a couple years ago before the pandemic. And, you know, that was really important for not just individuals who are younger and older to see each other, but for people to see a wide variety of queer people living and thriving. Since the pandemic, Uniting Pride has really increased the number of support and social groups, even, you know, on and allowing for virtual spaces. We have a youth and family programming groups that are like allow virtual play groups, queries that serves ages 10 to 13. We have a, you know, youth group, 13 to 18. We have all these different support groups that allow for people to get a sense of belonging, to meet people that are similar to them. But even within those support groups, you know, you don't have that intergenerational mix. However, we like this certain pop-up events I was talking about earlier, the community is lucky to have a wide variety of people, activists, board members, facilitators that are really dedicated to building the community here. And just this last weekend, the community, Uniting Pride specifically, partnered with Karma Carrington, which is a local, you know, drag queen here, wonderful person, to have, you know, drag picnic in the park. And this event was incredible because it not only united people across generations, but also, you know, allowed children, you know, youth, their parents, their families to be together publicly and experience their queerness in a very public way. It allowed younger generations to have the opportunity to see people like Karma Carrington, Seduction, Peach of, you know, not Peach of the Midwest, she didn't get to do this one, but, you know, these different opportunities to see thriving queer people have role models. And I just think it's excellent that we're getting opportunities to get to see each other outside of the bar arena, but in ways that we get to see the vibrancy of our community.
Mm. Let me take a moment to remind listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the disappearance of physical spaces for people who are LGBTQ, bookstores, bars, coffee shops, those kind of things, and what is coming in to replace them, where people are finding that community now. We're speaking, we just heard there, Jazz Routon, board member with Uniting Pride in Champaign, also Victor Salvo, director of the Legacy Project in Chicago, and Tati Shante, mutual aid coordinator with the Black-led and trans-led Brave Space Alliance, also in Chicago. And Tati, I wonder if you can respond to this idea of intergenerational communication. I mean, I'm just imagining, on the one hand, a lot of people who come to Brave Space, I imagine, will have had bad experiences with older generations, maybe being rejected by family or church or something. But, you know, also there's the benefit we've heard about in this conversation of seeing, you know, people have living fulfilling lives who are older, who are in the community. Can you talk about that? Do people coming to Brave Space, you know, do they make those intergenerational connections?
Yeah, I've been noticing that more lately, especially with the makeup room. We just have so many different people coming in, and now we've been getting a lot more press around it. And so
for people who aren't familiar with a makeup room, maybe you can talk about what that is.
Yes, I'm so sorry. I'm so used to talking about it. Yeah, our makeup room is one of our gender affirming rooms at Brave Space Alliance. So we have the makeup room in the den. And the makeup room, you can come pick up 10 items a week for free. We have makeup of all kinds that has been donated. It's for POC, trans and queer people and sex workers. And so we offer makeup for free to come pick up. And there's so much in there. We first started it as a makeup drive back in September with the Chicago Black Drag Council. It was for one of our mutual aid groups. And then we got so much makeup. I think we estimated about 3,500 to 4,000 items worth around $60,000.
Oh my gosh.
That was donated. Yeah. We got a really great response from the community, and we partnered with Roscoe's Tavern and Replay Andersonville to be drop-off coordinators. It just filled my living room, and I was expecting just to get a few items, but we were like, okay, so I guess we'll turn this into a makeup room. And then from that, we were inspired to do something similar for transmasculine folks, although the makeup room is for everyone. And so we have the den, which now has binders for free for people to come pick up, and packers and packing underwear. And we're starting to get like do-rags, clippers, and like other grooming materials. So that's been really exciting. And it's been a really big pull because, you know, these things are maybe not some things that people think are, you know, first priority. Of course, a lot of people think healthcare and housing, and, you know, we do work on stuff like that, but I think it's also good to offer these basic tools for survival, because a lot of times trans women, especially when you're starting out, makeup is a huge, huge, huge help for just feeling affirmed in your gender. And it can be very expensive. And so we want to be able to offer this resource, and people are willing to donate towards it. So might as well make a room and kind of be that bridge for this kind of affirming stuff and care for our community.
Yeah. I want to go now to the phones again. Tom is on the line from Springfield. Tom, thank you for calling in.
Hello.
What I understand you are becoming a publisher, or you're already a publisher. Can you talk about? Go ahead. Yeah.
I try to run it as an online newspaper. It's still at a blog level, but I actually try to cover LGBTQ outside of the Chicago area, because there are a lot of resources out of the city that many people may not know of.
Yeah, are you finding community online then, more so than in physical spaces these days?
Somewhat online, yes, definitely. It's actually how I found. I only moved to Springfield last year, but it was online. I was able to establish a local group of friends and actually start to expand and meet new people. But it's not the same as actually going to a physical space. I was actually very happy when I heard there was a new bar in Springfield that people could go to.
Okay. Well, Tom, thank you so much for calling in. I want to mention to listeners, if you're interested in connecting with some of the organizations we're mentioning today, you can find information about them at our website, 21stshow.org. Only a couple minutes left in our conversation. Victor, I want to ask you, can you talk about what is leading to the closure of these spaces? We haven't really talked about that aspect of this. You know, is it financial challenges? Is it, you know, just the changing social trends? What do you see is behind the closure of these dedicated LGBTQ spaces?
I think it's a multi-pronged effect. It's just sort of part of the evolution of society in many ways. Some smaller places began to lose relevance when it became possible for queer people to feel comfortable in non-queer identified spaces. You know, sometimes like it's easier for a guy to pick up another guy in a straight bar. And because, you know, the pickings are slimmer, I guess. And that coupled with the rise of social interaction applications, make it possible for people who want to hook up to do so in another environment without having to necessarily go to a bar to do that. You add to that the age part of just not being comfortable in a space that's really sort of fixated on youth and sexuality and attractiveness and all that, and then the fact that there are spaces which are still discriminatory against people of color and people who are gender non-confirming. You know, it just sort of forced a diaspora to kind of come over the community, I think. And once the volume started to go down, these places simply were not able to survive on the revenue that they were generating, because they are ultimately businesses. And I want to think that as a result of COVID, that there's going to be a renewed desire to actually gather in space and physically be with people. And that's my hope in any way.
Yeah. Coming together after the pandemic. All right. I want to thank my guests. They've been Victor Salvo, Executive Director of the Legacy Project in Chicago, Tati Shante, Mutual Aid Coordinator with the Brave Space Alliance, and Jazz Routon, a board member with Uniting Pride Community Center in Champaign. Victor, Tati, Jazz, thanks so much for being with us today on the 21st.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
More to come after a short break. You're listening to the 21st. Stay with us.